This is the Digital Nomad Quest podcast with Sharon Sung, teaching people how to build passive income, become financially free, and design their best lives. Hey guys, it's Sharon and Sean with Good Sweet Homes, and today we're going to talk about how much we actually spent on our $65,000 house. So let's rewind a bit. I know I've made a few videos on this property already, but let's talk about it. So this was listed as a 3-bedroom, 1-bath, and it was a small property, around 900 square feet.
When we walked the property, turns out it was only a 2-bedroom, 1-bath. So for all of you who are getting into real estate investing, it's really important to walk your properties, or at least have someone you trust walk it for you. Having that 3rd bedroom would increase the rent amount we can get, as well as the property values itself. So when we saw that it was only a 2-bedroom, 1-bath, we were pretty sad and disheartened.
But at a $65,000 price point, we thought it was a pretty good deal in that area.
Initially, we planned on making this into a short-term rental property. Unfortunately, in this particular city, there is a short-term rental ordinance, which says that you cannot have another short-term rental property within 500 feet of another one. And at first, looking at the map online, everything looked all good and dandy. And then it wasn't until after we closed and we called the city itself, asked for some permitting questions, that's when they said, oh, there's actually a neighbor 480 feet away from you who is already in process for this permit.
So with this property, we decided to make it into a long-term rental. Now, initially, we had estimated around $30,000 to $40,000 of renovations, but unfortunately, we weren't correct. So this episode is really to help you guys learn from our mistakes and see what you guys should and shouldn't do.
Especially when it comes to working with new contractors that you don't know.
It's not uncommon that your estimated renovations are going to go a bit over budget, so you should definitely set a buffer for that. Well, when we first walked the property, it was pretty disgusting. There was a bunch of poop, it smelled really bad, there were cigarette stains on the walls, it was really messy and disgusting. But because it was a smaller property, we thought that it wouldn't cost like a ton of money to fix up. The bones were okay, but the foundation had a bit of problem, and there wasn't a central HVAC system in place. Initially, we also noticed a den, so that we thought maybe we could convert that back into a 3-1, because it was listed as a 3-1, but we found that the space was not big enough for that, and we decided to convert that into like a laundry room.
Property also had a garage, but the garage was slanted on one side. And you know, the first contractor said, yeah, no problem, we put some foam on it to lift it up. And when it came down to it, it turns out that garage was not salvageable, so we had to tear it down and build a brand new carport there instead.
Now, one thing is, we did meet this contractor on site. They were actually touring the property when we were thinking about buying it, and we thought maybe we could work with him. But I think we could have done better on our due diligence around this contractor. We should have definitely called his references, done a bunch of digging to kind of see if he was the right choice for us, because we kind of just went immediately like, all right, let's go with him because he said all these really nice things, but we really should have done a lot more background check on him. The thing is, when we were working with him, we would come visit the property. We'd drive like 2 hours to check out the property and found out that like nothing was really being done. And that was over many months. And we kept trying to give him second chances, but he just kept giving excuses. Sometimes not even picking up his phone. That's something you guys should definitely know, that if a contractor is doing something like this, you should definitely just cut it off and try to find someone new.
So one of the reasons why our project for this one went so over budget was because we had to fire this initial contractor, bring in another one. So all the work that the first contractor did was basically invalidated. We had to pay another contractor to come and redo all the work that the first guy did because they were really incompetent.
A lot of the work he had done, the new contractor had to kind of redo. So it was like paying double almost for some of the work. So the actual number in renovations ended up being $74,000. So that was over budget by maybe $34,000, because we expected 30 to 40 grand. And when we break it down, it looks like $28,500 ended up being for the materials. $19,900 went to the first contractor, and then $25,500 went to the second contractor.
And besides the financial loss, we also lost a lot of time too, because this project should have been done within 6 weeks. It ended up taking us almost 6 months to actually complete it and have it finally rented out.
Yeah, we bought it in July and then we finished it in late November. So it was a very long process. It was stressing me out because when we were trying to talk to the first contractor, he would just like never pick up, and it was so annoying. And every time we went to that property, we were just disappointed. We were just like, we need to find someone new. It took us way too long to kind of make that pivot because we just kept thinking, you know, it'll be better. It'll be better next time.
Another thing that really held us back was the fear of switching contractors, because we didn't know too many contractors out there there who'd be willing to take over someone else's project. But, you know, going from our experience now, I would say you definitely need to try, right? You should always try to build as many contacts as possible, because even if you have one crew that you really, really like, always need a backup crew in case something happens to your first one. You know, maybe they're too busy to take on your project, or again, maybe if they go bankrupt or suddenly their business practices aren't as good, you do need that backup team.
So with this second contractor, we ended up calling his references, checking his online presence, and kind of testing whether he was responsive and communicative. And turns out he was always texting us, always calling us. So it was a really good thing. He also sent us a lot of pictures to keep us updated, where we didn't feel like we had to micromanage as much. Whereas with the first guy, we had to continuously bother him, like, what is going on with the property every time we visited? Like, what's going on?
And he was also very weird with his payment. So apparently he had some issues with his bank account. I couldn't do, you know, Zelle, Quick Pay. And that's where you get a red flag there. So if they're asking for Venmo or Cash App or a business transaction, it is kind of sketchy.
So one of the things is, you guys noticed that the way I broke the amounts was that we paid for materials ourselves while we paid for labor with the contractors. So that's what we normally like to do, because we don't want the contractor to like upcharge us for materials. So we'd rather just pay for it when it happens. So anytime they visited Home Depot, they would call us and we would just give them the payment information so that he could pay for the products.
So to your point as well, it's actually really important that we did this payment schedule, because if we had paid him a large deposit, 50% of the project upfront, and then he ghosts us, what can we do? Like, it's so hard to get your money back from someone who's like that, versus, okay, we only paid him for the work that was completed. Granted, the work wasn't that great and he did waste a lot of our time, but we didn't pay him more than what he actually worked on the project.
So if we didn't hire the first contractor and just started with the second contractor, that amount looked like it was around $54,000. And I feel like we may have paid extra in materials too for the first contractor.
So another big expense that we had was that they told us to tear down the garage and, you know, tear down the den and build it back up. But I wonder if we had a better contractor on site, maybe they could have actually fixed the garage in the first place instead of tearing it down.
You want to find a contractor who's really able to like understand if they can keep something, salvage something, and not have to overspend by replacing everything. It was really like a red flag when he just overpromised and then underdelivered the first contractor. Like, he would say that he could salvage it and then, oh, actually you can't. It's pulling down the whole house. We have to replace everything. So it's good to get a second opinion. Now, I know you guys want me to break down the numbers of the $74,000 in renovations. I'm gonna give you guys a bit of a glimpse, but it's actually kind of all over the place since we had two contractors and some were doing the same things. And some of the work from the second contractor was in replace of the first contractor. So it's just like a lot of mess. So I'm going to try to break it down as much as possible. So it looks like we spent $6,100 on the AC.
That's for a full HVAC system. That's pretty good, because it includes the actual new heater, includes the new condenser unit for the air conditioner, and it also includes installing all the vents for the property.
And it looks like we spent around $3,300 for the appliances.
So that includes the dishwasher, the refrigerator, and a new water heater.
And then we spent $2,165 for haul off. So I think we could have spent less on this, because we actually bought a property recently and we've gotten quotes around $550 for haul off for a pretty big property. So I think we could have lowered this. Looks like $4,800 for foundation, $4,000 for the garage demo. Now, like Sean mentioned, we don't know if we could have salvaged that garage. It would have been nice to have, because it would have been nice to just allow the car to park there instead of in the carport driveway thing. And speaking of which, we spent $1,900 on that carport. So that ended up being a huge part of the expense, which I did not appreciate.
Yeah, because the end result was also not what we expected to. You know, I thought it would be a nice carport that would attach to the house, but then when you see it, it looks like just some flimsy piece of plastic. And, you know, going back, I probably wouldn't have done that.
And then for flooring, it looked like $2.50 per square foot for the materials. And flooring labor was $1,500. That looks about right. So usually $2 to $3 for flooring material, and then about $2 for labor. It just depends on who you use for the contractor and also what finish you want for the flooring. But when it's a rental, like, we're not going to do anything fancy and luxurious, so that looks about right for the flooring. And then we spent $3,475 on labor for paint.
But that also includes like sheetrock repair and texture. So some of the walls we had to open up and remove. Like, there were a lot of rat's nests inside the walls, which is pretty gross. So we had to remove that. And there were some random holes in the walls that we had to patch up as well. So all those patches, sheetrocking, texturing, and painting over cost that much money.
Yeah, and the material for the paint looks like about $500. I would say that initially I thought that labor for the paint seemed kind of high for a 900 square foot property, but like you mentioned, there was repairs that had to be done, so it makes sense. But we also had to pay $2,240 on exterior siding repair and paint. So the paint and siding repair and all the sheetrock repair seem to have cost a lot when you add all that up.
But like we mentioned before too, the exterior of the house had a lot of holes. Unfortunately, rats got inside the house because of those holes, so it's a good thing we repaired them. You know, like water lines were being exposed to the outside because of the outside being open, so it had to be done.
So I think it's a lot more modern now. Definitely way more livable than before. It was disgusting, smelled really bad before, where I almost wanted to throw up. Like, it was really bad. So now it's so much better. We're pretty happy with the outcome. It looks like the ARV, like we estimated $130,000 to $140,000, which I think is on point. Because I looked at comparables that are pending right now, and it's $145,000 listed, $160,000 listed, around the same area with the same specs, like 2-1, 900 square feet, as you can see here. With Texas, it's a non-disclosure state, so I can't see exactly how much it sold for, unless I had MLS access, but this is pretty good for me to kind of gauge. So it's looking pretty good in that sense, like I don't feel that bad about it. We've also rented this property out now. It's at $1,350. So with the purchase price plus the renovations, it was about $140,000 in. And we also paid all cash for it. And with the $1,350 in rent, it looks like it's almost meeting that 1% rule, which is pretty good. And because we don't have a mortgage on it, we should be cash flowing pretty well. We might do a cash out refinance in the future to pull some money back out to reinvest. But I would say I'm pretty okay with the results. Like, it's not the best, but it's not the worst. So we were actually wrong with our estimation, but luckily, since we did like buffer for a higher ARV, it ended up meeting it, I would say. So we ended up buying it basically at market price.
We definitely learned a lesson from this one. Again, caused a lot of mental anguish. You know, even though it didn't cause a lot of financial problems for us, it caused some sleepless nights, some very annoying phone calls with our old contractor.
Some fights with us too.
So I would say, you know, going forward, we have learned from our mistakes and we've created some more processes. So for one, we're definitely interviewing a lot more contractors. We don't just trust the first person we go with. Call all references now. We actually have contracts in place that we make the contractor sign that, you know, have terms of like when deadlines should be done. So now we have contracts in place. We have a definite scope of work created. And actually it helped us a lot too, because we actually learned a lot about what we need to do as far as putting things down on a contract or on a scope of work. So
yeah, I think normally like we work with the property management company and they will handle like renovations a lot of times. He's done flips before, but like generally with our buy and holds, we would trust the PM company a lot. We've done a couple projects where we really manage the renovations, but we are definitely learning a lot from this experience, getting a lot more hands-on and like knowing what to do in order to build the solid team for future projects. So for example, we did buy a $253,000 property recently, and we interviewed over 6 contractors. We called a bunch of references. We took notes on everything. We checked how timely they were, their pricing, how they were measuring the square footage of the home and all these different things to see like who we wanted to work with. And we ended up having 2 contractors that we really liked. We decided between the 2 of them, and it's so much better when you have like good candidates that you are actually choosing from versus just like picking whoever. So right. You definitely should have that process in place. This is a very important part of this whole renovation process. You got to choose the right team to work with.
And now it's good for us too, because we have 2 options and we're trying one person first. If they don't work out, we can go back to the other crew too and have them come on board.
So I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. It really helps our podcast grow. And thanks again. I'll see you guys in the next one.